Good afternoon, and thank you for coming. I'm Joanne Fisher, and I'm the Executive Director of the Maternity Care Coalition. And I have with me my colleagues, Letty Thal, who is our Director of Policy, Raina Lead, did I say that right? Who was an MPH Drexel student who was working with Margie Mogul, our Director of Research. So, Raina was kind enough to combine her presentation with ours so we could bring it up to the moment. First of all, what is the Maternity Care Coalition? We're a community-based nonprofit organization. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary. We started when we went to City Council in Philadelphia and we said we told the city that you need to outreach into the community and help get women into prenatal care. And the city said to us, tell us how to do it, tell us what to do, do it. So we actually got into direct service as a form, as advocacy. And we run the Mom Mobile program, which is a community outreach and family support program. We have 11 sites in the community, including our newest Mom Mobile program at Riverside Correctional Facility, which is women's prison in Philadelphia. We have served over 60,000 families in the last 25 years, and policy and advocacy has always been a very strong part of what we do. We call our community health workers advocates, and our advocates inform their clients about public policy, and what we learn in our direct service work informs our public policy on the local, state, and national level. So in this photo, I'm going to point out our governor with our staff at a recent rally for health reform in Pennsylvania, and our advocates on the street recruiting people into our Mom Mobile program, and the kind of PR and media that we have a history of. Visibility has always been an important part of our direct service and our advocacy programs. And I want to point out Andre Kovach in the back, who has done research on our programs, particularly around individual empowerment of the families with whom we work. With that background, and we have a budget of around $4 million, a staff around 70, and you're looking at we have one other staff person in our research and policy department. So, a year ago, September, we issued a report, Childbirth at a Crossroads, and we published, and it's available on our website, www.mommobile.org, where we spoke to individual clients, we interviewed stakeholders, and we had a major press event. And Margie's going to talk more specifically about our methodology. Oh, that was my slide. These were the five crossroads that we talked about, and today we're not going to talk about all of them, but these are, go ahead, Margie.
Well, when we thought about how we wanted to collect the information that we needed, we decided to start by identifying key informants, key stakeholders in the community. And we used a snowball sampling technique and ended up interviewing more than 70 key informants who led us to each other. We also held focus group with consumers and professional groups And we held two community forums that we called our professional education series that we had a very good community turnout for. And of course, we interviewed individual families and pregnant women. Do you, Letty, remember how many that we, I forget the exact. And then, of course, we used existing data by looking at, what was already out there in the literature and looked into resources that are available from our, local, state, and national health department and other sources.
Philadelphia.
What we did, and let me talk a little bit about, this project was part of our 25th anniversary that Joanne mentioned, was we wanted to look at what does childbirth look like 25 years ago and what does it look like today. And we looked at it, Philadelphia County is a major metropolitan area. We looked at Philadelphia County and our four suburban Pennsylvania counties surrounding it when we looked at a lot of this data. So some of what we found was, and then we organized it, as Margie said, we had all this data, we organized it into looking at five different crossroads, is what we called them, or issues. And one was diversity. And what we found, which is not unusual for some of you, but for a lot of people in our region, and particularly in our wealthy suburban communities, that 1 out of 10 homes in the suburban communities did not have English as the primary language. And that we also looked at our statewide births and that 28% of the births in all of Pennsylvania, not just in Philadelphia, which is considered the, we are the low-income urban area and Pittsburgh in our state, but that we had the 28% of the births in our region were to MA patients. And what we did with each one of the issues is we came up with recommendations, and we had 50 recommendations. And some of them for diversity was that practitioners should meet national standards, healthcare facilities should provide services, and that we need sufficient healthcare providers that look like the rest of the population. Access was our major issue, and this is my memory, which is that 1 out of 10 women in southeastern Pennsylvania, ages 18 to 39, do not have health insurance, which is one of our actions. We are supporting some of the legislation that we now have in our state legislature to ensure more people have access to universal health care. I get into recommendations. I like action. We think we need to expand healthcare, and we need to improve the current systems to make them easier. Why, after I have a baby and if I'm low income, do I have to go to one clinic for family planning, another clinic for postpartum, and a third clinic for my child? Our next issue is care that Rain is going to take care of.
Okay, I'm going to go through a bunch of numbers. Some people already are aware of across the nation that there's a declining pool of providers, and Southeast Pennsylvania is particularly hard hit. There's a bunch of different issues along with just basic, less doctors, nurses, midwives overall, but there's also many malpractice issues which have actually caused the declining pool of practitioners. And most of these numbers actually come from a couple of different places. Data that was already reported, journal articles and that sort of thing, from MCC's Childbirth at a Crossroads report and from my master's project, which was a basic key informant project. I had interviewed the OB chairs at the Philadelphia hospitals and a couple other key stakeholders, such as the Southeast Pennsylvania director of the American College of Nurse Midwives and some other midwife providers in the area. So first and foremost, there is a declining pool of practitioners. Since 1997, actually in the last 10 years, 13 southeastern Pennsylvania hospitals have actually discontinued obstetric care completely. Overall, there's a declining number of graduating United States medical students choosing OBGYN. And actually, despite Philadelphia being the home of one of the premier nurse midwifery training programs in the nation, few of those graduates actually remain in Philadelphia. And about 4.5% of babies in Southeast Philadelphia or Southeast Pennsylvania are actually delivered by midwives overall. And that's compared with about 9.4% in Pennsylvania and 9% nationally.
And the Amish make up a big chunk of
it. Yeah. And actually, despite the steady rate of birth, it's about 50,000, again, 13 obstetrical units have closed in the last 10 years. There's actually only 8 still open in Philadelphia itself. That's 25% fewer maternity facilities for the same number of births since 1990. And about 7% of Pennsylvania practicing OBs are actually planning to stop doing deliveries within the next 12 months. And then on to some midwife issues here. I actually had done my report directly on midwives, so I spoke to quite a few of them. There are about 40 practicing midwives in Philadelphia, which only about 20 or so are actually doing deliveries. And depending on which hospital they're doing the deliveries at, it's between 15 and 25% for Philadelphia itself. A lot of that has to do with the urban population. In Pennsylvania, they're much higher, and actually in some rural counties in Pennsylvania, they're actually much higher, and some actually reach to almost 50%. As Joanne said, some of that has to do with the Amish population. A lot of it has to do simply with the fact that it's rural. There's one hospital in 3 counties, and they're covered by 2 midwives, maybe even 1 sometimes. And just a little bit about Philadelphia midwives. There's actually great variation among the hospital policies. When I actually spoke to the OB chairs, almost none of them could actually tell me why or why not they had midwives doing deliveries. For the most part, they were like, I don't really know. That's how we did it in the past. It's working. That's how we're going to keep doing it. And out of the 7, I believe, that I talked to, one of them told me that they have midwives on staff because they actually like the care that they give and that the OB chair found it important to the patients to have midwives there. And a couple of recommendations. First and foremost is that we have a maternal child health policy that's based on sound data. And the importance of this actually comes from that data about the 50% of midwife births in some counties in Pennsylvania. The woman I actually had talked to, reportedly on the birth certificate data, it's much lower because you have an OB in attendance somewhere in the hospital, but the midwife is there at delivery. But because she's not, wasn't quite certified to be there at the delivery, the OB puts his name on the birth certificate, but he was nowhere around. So there's an issue with the data on the birth certificates about attendance at birth. So we do need maternal child health policy that's based on sound, correct data. Second, there needs to be a change in the climate that surrounds medical malpractice and obstetrics. This is actually hopefully changing. Philadelphia was really widely known for having an issue with malpractice suits, generally because they were notorious for giving really, really high amounts of money to people. So even if you had a delivery outside of Philadelphia and you wanted to sue, you could sue in a Philadelphia court and get lots of money. That has changed. I believe it was actually a state court law that you actually have to sue in the county that the delivery happened. Third is that regional support of efforts to increase the supply of childbirth practitioners, providers, especially those interested in serving low-income or minority women. We do need to have a regional support to increase the supply, including talking with the nurse midwifery school, talking with everybody who has anything actually at all to do with prenatal care, preconceptual care, you know, anything to do with that, and getting them all together. And last is an improved work environment for current practitioners. It's not only important to get the medical students in, but to keep those practicing where they're at. And a lot of that has to do with getting payments reimbursed at the proper level. In Pennsylvania, the Medicaid levels for delivery are much lower than a private insurance payment. And it's actually low enough that they don't want to do the Medicaid patients. A big part of this has to do with women in public health centers where they actually have either no insurance or public insurance. They're actually missing out on a big continuity of care issue that these women are not, they're getting prenatal care with one person and then they're going to a completely different setting for their delivery. Oftentimes records don't go with those women, so there's a big issue there. And that actually helps with the work environment for current practitioners. I actually do clinical research on a labor and delivery floor, and I can't tell you how many times a nurse or a doctor has complained about getting a patient with no prenatal records. So that actually would help the work environment for the practitioners. And one actually final note about midwives, this is actually a very good point. Pennsylvania has now come into the 20th century. They have now become the last state in the nation to give midwives the ability to prescribe medicine. Finally.
This was the press conference.
I know if you're sitting here that you all know about the racial and ethnic disparities in infant mortality, and they are similar in Philadelphia as they are everywhere else. What you may not know is that Philadelphia has very poor outcomes in terms of breastfeeding initiation rates. We're the 10th, we're lowest among the 10 largest cities in the U.S., and that has very important implications for this population as well, and we're doing quite a bit of work around that also. I'm very pleased to report that in this area, some of the recommendations that emerged from the Crossroads report have now been implemented. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has now established an Office of Health Equity to address these problems, and the state has adopted the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System so that we can begin to track some of these outcomes. We are still working in the state. We would really like the state and the local governments to issue a report card so that we could identify individual pockets of need in communities around the state. So this is an ongoing issue that we're working on and recommending.
And our report was the first time the suburban counties, that data by racial grouping had ever been reported.
Support, which was really the culture and what is available to women. And we realized that what has happened is that pregnancy and births have really, while the majority are healthy events, we have technologically intensive births, that our C-sections are at an all-time high, and that breastfeeding, while it's better in the suburban counties, as Margie said, we cannot in Philadelphia even measure duration. Our initiation rates are very poor, and we don't last past 11 weeks to even measure. So we have a long way to go. So our recommendations have been we need a full range of high-tech and high-touch options. We need to make sure that both public and private sector policies recognize the importance of family leave, flexible work schedules, family-friendly practices, which is really critical when we start talking about universal health care, employer paying or paying a portion of employees' health care. That's a public-private sector that we really work to make sure everybody talks together on these issues. Oh, and our improved local for breastfeeding mothers and babies, we're really quite fortunate that we have a physician advocacy fellow out of Columbia University, it used to be called a Soros Fellow, who is working with us, Dr. Esther Chung, who's also an MPH as well as an MD, is here today, who's working with us to look at how to help breastfeeding in three different ways, one among our population and our clients that we see on the Mommobile and in the WIC programs. Two is to work with employers on how they can be, we have sponsored what we call business-friendly, breastfeeding-friendly business awards. And our third is to do a survey of hospitals and what the hospital policies are. So this is a summary of our five findings, of our five issues. And what we really want to do is say that we looked at these, we developed the 50 recommendations, and then we wanted to turn them into action. And to translate those recommendations into action, and this is one of the things that we really spent and are still spending a lot of time on, we have to figure out who has the authority and the responsibility for the funding, for the regulation, and for the delivery of these services. We all talk about, oh, we need these services. But if we can't figure out and get them integrated, it's really sometimes not worth the efforts. So we really needed to look at, and in our Commonwealth, which may be, or in our, we do have a Commonwealth, and it may be different in each state, but we have a Department of Health, a State Department of Health, that regulates hospitals and facilities. And this is some of where we're going. We have a, and we try to bring attention to the issue as well. But we have the state. We also have another state department that regulates Medicaid and is responsible for all Medicaid funding. And that's really kind of critical. So in recognizing that a lot of attention needs to be put on our state capitol, our executive branch, and our legislature, we have here four pictures. One is at a rally with children, and if you can see at the top, women and babies. That was something that a state legislator wanted to do, have a rally, bring press. We accommodate. And catty corner to that is our state senator Connie Williams, who is very big on pushing breastfeeding and has taken a bill that's been sitting there for 10 to 15 years and got at least one bill through. And she wanted on Mother's Day, and we came and helped with a rally in a park.
And that was so that Philadelphia currently has an ordinance where you can't discriminate against women breastfeeding in public. The state does not have legislation. Connie introduced it, and it was passed. And we're going to talk about these other rallies in a minute.
Right.
So what was very interesting is we released the report the September before. We got a little bit of PR. One was a very interesting editorial in the Philadelphia Daily News who said we're having congressional elections and the Congress should listen to Maternity Care Coalition and what they're saying about the crisis in maternity care. And there was something on public radio, but very little PR. Then in February, Jean's Hospital, which was part of the Temple University healthcare system, closed their OB unit. That was the first closure after our report was issued. And it was buried in an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and basically no one was talking about it until I think it was March or April, when another hospital, Chestnut Hill Hospital, threatened to close its OB unit. Now, what's interesting is Chestnut Hill Hospital is where a lot of the movers and shakers, politically connected people, live in our city. So all of a sudden, there is concern that maternity units are closing, particularly when it's the maternity unit where, you know, a news broadcaster had their child or a politician had their child. A lot of the midwives and doulas live in that community. However, we really were able to embrace that and use that opportunity, and we had a tremendous amount of PR, including Katie Couric doing a national story in Philadelphia speaking about the maternity care crisis in Philadelphia. What I then said to the media and have been saying since then is we have moved from a crossroads to a crisis. We are in a situation where we have an area of our city where 1 million people live with no maternity hospital. All right, and when and one of the things that basically the hospital communicated to the community was that OB is no longer profitable, and therefore we can't do OB any longer. And you know, so then that leads to two potential responses. One is you either make OB profitable, if that's the the system under which you're working, or you have some regulatory response that says, regardless of whether OB is profitable, you need to offer OB in a community when you have X number of childbearing families. We have not had that response from the state, but what we have had is a city task group that is now beginning to bring everyone together to look at the issues. And Letty will talk about some of the very targeted legislative and policy work that we've done that has brought us, I have to say, in our 25 years, we've never been called up by the Secretary of Health, the governor, the mayor, to discuss these kinds of issues. So it's gotten to that level of interest and concern in our community. And one of those things that you saw was a rally. Here it is. this is, on the right is our deputy director speaking at a rally at Chestnut Hill where the doulas and midwives organized, got lots of media attention. And here's Letty speaking in Harrisburg at another rally. And behind her are a lot of the women and progressive state legislators.
So I think this is an opportunity for leadership and for recognition. A lot of these, and there were a lot more of our elected officials from the region who showed up for their photographs behind that podium that day, that we thank them and we go back and work with them. They have shown an interest, whether or not they will wear this as their primary issue, we don't know. But we thank them and we talk about them positively in the media all the time. And I think that's really important for us to look at and how we're moving this agenda. We also have very specifically, and we have pages up here, of what our recommendations for the next mayor should be. Again, so who's got the authority and the responsibility? What we think the governor ought to be doing, the executive branch, and what we think the state legislature ought to be doing, because they're the ones who are responsible, particularly in regulating our insurance industry in Pennsylvania. And I can say what we have up here for the legislature is now out of date because they have passed a lot of what we wanted and we'll be going back for the next round. Okay, what we've gotten is we have the nurse midwives. We have been working with the hospital association because this has been perceived as a hospital crisis, that the hospitals cannot make money on OB, that the hospitals are closing their OB units. Nobody has looked at it that this is a crisis for women, that this is a crisis for families. Where do women get prenatal care? They don't all go to the hospitals. So that we have been widening this, and so that right now in the state legislature is a bill that had been called the OB crisis solution bill. And it's now very clearly funds for hospitals who do their disproportionate share of Medicaid patients, so that no legislature thinks passing one bill is going to solve the problem.
Well, let me say that Letty has been at every hearing in Harrisburg. It's been all the insurance companies, the Medicaid managed care companies, the hospital lobbyists, and Letty. And but it's been very interesting because we've been there and we've been talking to the legislators. For example, one of the things that was in the hospital legislation was notification when a hospital decides to close. And I have to say our report is out of date also because we thought 90 days would be sufficient. We are clear now that we need at least 9 months from the time that a hospital announces that it's closing to when it actually closes to do all the things that have to be done in order to ensure decent transitions. And we were about to host a town meeting, and we have the flyers up here, where folks in our community where this hospital has closed and all of the receiving hospitals who were unprepared and the health professionals who you know had to find new jobs and had to support their clients and patients to find new places will be speaking out. But honestly, no one was paying any attention to this. And all the emphasis was, if we are going to be receiving new patients, then we need additional capital funds to expand our services. And while that may be true, we kept insisting that the money has to follow the women. And one of the issues was that the solutions, as Letty said, around disproportionate share, say you have to have more than 50% folks on Medicaid in order to receive disproportionate share. The hospital that closed had 33% Medicaid. That meant they wouldn't have received anything. So the result is that we may wind up only with our urban teaching hospitals that continue to do OB, and all of the other community hospitals will stop doing OB. And we're trying to stem that tide. But Letty is at the table and insisting that they pay attention to prenatal care, insisting that they pay attention to consumer protections. One other piece on the local front, we mentioned that City Health Department has put together a task group to look at this. It includes insurers, the hospitals. I have to say it's the first time all the five OB chairs of the medical institutions in our community have ever worked together. So that is hopeful. And the other piece is that we will tomorrow be electing a new mayor in Philadelphia. And there was not a public session on healthcare where the issue of the OB crisis didn't come up. So that he was so aware that this was front and center, actually both candidates, and we met with both candidates and we have recommendations for both candidates. I was appointed as one of the co-chairs of the health policy group for the new mayor, and I think it's because of this advocacy in the community. So we have those recommendations. City Council passed a resolution, you know, it doesn't do anything, but they said, you know, Harrisburg, you got to get people insurance. So that was helpful.
Anything we forgot? No, but I guess I want to, for those of you who might say, oh, I can't get engaged in the political process, you certainly can. We need to. What we need to be clear of is while Joanne, as an individual, was sitting on the task force for the mayor-elect, I relished in having the Republican candidate at every forum asked about health care say, oh, I'm following what that lady over there from Maternity Care Coalition tells me to do. And that was me. So our bipartisanship was kind of shared, and as long as we share it and recognize we don't support one specific candidate or political party, we're fine.
So we're happy to answer questions, any one of us, and